Okay, good afternoon. This is KDBS 90.3 FM. This is a public affairs show called Books and Ideas. I am DJ Safikar. We're broadcasting not far from where the village of Putatoy once stood, inhabited by Patwin Native Americans. For the second week, we're looking at psychopolitics, neoliberalism, and new technologies of power by Byung-Chul Han from 2017. We looked at chapters 1, 2, and 3 last week. Psychopolitics is written as a follow-up to the Burnout Society, so expands on the ideas that were presented there. In the first chapter, Han tries to show how freedom, which is the opposite of coercion, in fact produces it. Han also argues that instead of leading to a revolution of workers, capitalism has survived by mutating into neoliberalism and financial capitalism, which are implementing a post-industrial immaterial mode of production. In fact, given the isolation of self-exploiting subjects of achievement society, no political we is even possible that could rise up and undertake collective action. Han also argues that in our world, we no longer work in order to satisfy our needs. Instead, we work for capital. Capital generates needs of its own. Mistakenly, we perceive these needs as if they belong to us. Han notes that initially, the internet was celebrated as a medium of boundless liberty. But he argues that today, unbounded freedom and communication are switching over into total control and surveillance. The second chapter is on smart power. Han begins with the claim that power manifests itself under highly different modes of appearance. He then adds that power that relies on violence does not represent power of the highest order. The greater power is, the more quietly it works. The neoliberal regime's technology of power takes on subtle, supple, and smart forms. Thereby, it escapes all visibility. Now, the subjugated subject is not even aware of its own subjugation. The whole context of domination remains entirely hidden. Consequently, the subject thinks itself free. Power that is smart and friendly does not operate frontally, i.e., against the will of those who are subject to it. Instead, it guides their will to its own benefit. Instead of standing opposed to the subject, smart and friendly power meets the subject halfway. Han argues that smart power with a liberal-friendly appearance, power that stimulates and seduces, is more compelling than power that imposes, threatens, and decrees. Okay, that was the summary of last week's show. Now we're ready for chapter 4. Chapter 4 is called Biopolitics. This was a term coined by Michel Foucault, but not explained very well or expanded on account of Foucault's early death. This chapter begins with the distinction between, on the one hand, raw power, might, and violence, as it was represented by a tyrant or a king, and on the other hand, disciplinary power. The power of sovereignty is the might of the sword. It is the power to kill. But Foucault claims that since the 17th century, power has taken the form of discipline. Disciplinary power is a power over life. Its function is to invest life through and through. It is the careful administration of bodies and the calculated management of life. Han maintains that the transition from the power of sovereignty to disciplinary power followed from changes in forms of production, specifically the shift from agrarian to industrial production. As industrialization proceeded, it became necessary to discipline the body and fit it to machinic production. Instead of torturing the body, disciplinary power yokes it into a system of norms. Calculated coercion pervades each and every limb and comes to be inscribed even in the automatism of habit. The body is calibrated to be a production unit. Han claims that the disciplines are methods which make possible the meticulous control of the operation of the body, which assure the constant subjugation of its forces and impose upon them a relation of docility-utility. Disciplinary power is normative power. It subjects the subject to a set of rules, norms, commandments, and prohibitions, and eliminates deviation and anomalies. One of the components of disciplinary power is the negativity of training and drills. In this way, it's like the power of sovereignty, which has its basis on the negativity of levying and conscription. Both sovereign power and disciplinary power pursue exploitation by others and from outside. They bring forth the obedience subject. Foucault argued that biopolitics is a governmental technology of disciplinary power. He also related it to population. Foucault explicitly discusses the biopolitics of the population. Disciplinary power treats population as a productive and reproductive mass to be administered carefully. Biopolitics is devoted to this task. Reproductive cycles, birth and death rates, levels of general health, and life expectancy provide the objects of regulation. But Hahn argues that this approach proves altogether unsuited to the neoliberal regime, which exploits the psyche above all. Biopolitics, which makes use of population statistics, has no access to the psychic realm. It can deliver no material for drawing up a psychogram of the population. However, big data provides the means for establishing not just an individual, but a collective psychogram, perhaps even the psychogram of the unconscious itself. As such, it may shine a light into the depths of the psyche and exploit the unconscious entirely. Okay. Next chapter is called Foucault's Dilemma. After Discipline and Punish, Foucault recognized that disciplinary society did not reflect the times in every respect. In the late 70s, he devoted his attention to neoliberal forms of government. However, the problem with his analysis is that he stuck to the concepts of population and biopolitics and suited to describing the neoliberal regime. Consequently, he failed to do what the circumstances actually called for, which Hahn argues is to make the turn to psychopolitics. Hahn speculates that if Foucault had lived, he would have reevaluated his idea of biopolitics and abandoned it in order to investigate neoliberal psychopolitics. Foucault explicitly ties biopolitics to capitalism disciplinary form, which socializes the body in its productive capacity. For capitalist society, it is biopolitics, the biological, the somatic, the corporal, that matters more than anything else. In other words, biopolitics fundamentally concerns the biological and the physical. All in all, it constitutes a politics of the body in the fullest sense. But Hahn maintains that neoliberalism, a further development, indeed a muted form of capitalism, is not primarily concerned with the biological, somatic, than the corporal. It has discovered the psyche as a productive force. This psychic turn, that is, the turn to psychopolitics, also connects with the mode of operation of contemporary capitalism. Now, immaterial and non-physical forms of production are what determine the course of capitalism. What gets produced are not material objects, but immaterial ones. For instance, information and programs. The body no longer represents a central force of production as it formerly did in biopolitical disciplinary society. Physical discipline has given way to mental optimization and neuro-enhancement. Today, the body is being released from the immediate process of production and turning into the object of optimization, whether along aesthetic lines or in terms of health technology. Cosmetic surgery and fitness studios are taking the place of disciplinary orthopedics. Hahn recruits Bernard Stiegler to shore up support for his views on Foucault. Stiegler is French and one of the most influential European philosophers of 21st century. Stiegler also argued that Foucault's concept of biopower is not suited to the times. According to Stiegler, biopower has been replaced by psychotechnological psychopower. Above all, Stiegler has in mind the programming industry, television and YouTube. By reducing us to impulsive creatures of consumption, it induces mass regression. Such psychotechnics contrasts with the technology of writing and reading. For Stiegler, the medium of literacy means enlightenment. Stiegler prescribes to Kant's view that humanity's sovereignty and maturity is based on the apparatus of reading and writing. Hahn, however, is critical of Stiegler's overemphasis on television. Stiegler hardly examines truly digital technology such as the internet and social media, which prove fundamentally different from the mass media of the past. What is more, he barely pays attention to the panoptic structure of digital networks. As a result, he completely misses the workings of neoliberal psychopolitics, which employs digital technology on a massive scale. In the early 1980s, Foucault turned to technologies of the self. The term refers to intentional and voluntary actions by which men not only prescribe for themselves rules of conduct, but also seek to transform themselves, to change themselves in their singular being, and to make their life into an oeuvre that carries certain aesthetic values and meets certain stylistic criteria. Excuse me. Foucault developed a historically situated ethics of the self, and he did so in a context largely detached from technologies and techniques of power and domination. Hahn argues that the blind spot in Foucault's analysis is the technology of power under a neoliberal regime. Foucault did not see that the neoliberal regime utterly claims the technology of the self for its own purposes. Perpetual self-optimization, as exemplary neoliberal technology of the self, represents nothing so much as the highly efficient mode of domination and exploitation. As an entrepreneur of himself, the neoliberal achievement subject engages in auto-exploitation willingly and even passionately. The self as a work of art amounts to a beautiful but deceptive illusion that the neoliberal regime maintains in order to exhaust its resources entirely. Under neoliberalism, the technology of power takes on a subtle form. It does not lay hold of individual directly. Instead, it ensures that individuals act on themselves so that power relations are internalized and then interpreted as freedom. Self-optimization and submission, freedom and exploitation fall into one. Such engineering of freedom and exploitation, which occurs in order to effect self-exploitation, is what escaped Foucault. Next chapter is called Healing as Killing. Hahn claims that neoliberal psychopolitics is always coming up with more refined form of exploitation. Countless self-management workshops, motivational retreats, seminars on personality and mental training promise boundless self-optimization and heightened efficiency. They are steered by neoliberal techniques of domination which aim to capitalize not just on working time, but on the person, him or herself. All the attention the individual commands and indeed his or her very life. Neoliberalism has discovered integral human being as the object of exploitation. The neoliberal imperative of self-optimization serves only to promote perfect functioning within the system. Inhibitions, points of weakness, and mistakes are to be therapeutically eliminated in order to enhance efficiency and performance. The age of sovereignty was the age of levying and conscription, the expropriation and the appropriation of goods and services. The power of sovereignty expresses itself as the right to seize and dispose at will. In contrast, disciplinary society banks on production. It is the age of active and industrial added value. That said, the time for creating new value, which is real, is over and done. Indeed, under financial capitalism of our day, value is being destroyed at the root, eradicated. The neoliberal regime is in the course of inaugurating the age of exhaustion. Today, the psyche itself is being exploited. Accordingly, psychic maladies such as depression and burnout define our times. In contemporary American self-help literature, the magic word is healing. The term refers to self-optimization that's supposed to be therapeutically eliminate, supposed to therapeutically eliminate any and all functional weakness or mental obstacle in the name of efficiency and performance. Yet perpetual self-optimization, which coincides point for point with the optimization of the system, is proven destructive. It is leading to mental collapse. Self-optimization, it turns out, amounts to total self-exploitation. The neoliberal ideology of self-optimization displays religious, indeed fanatical, traits. It entails a new form of subjectivation. Endlessly working at self-improvement resembles the self-examination and self-monitoring of Protestantism, which represents a technology of subjectivation and domination in its own right. Now, instead of searching out sins, one hunts down negative thoughts. The ego grapples with itself as an enemy. Today, even fundamentalist preachers act like managers and motivational trainers, proclaiming the new gospel of limitless achievement and optimization. Hahn reminds us that it is impossible to subordinate human personhood to the dictates of positivity entirely. Without negativity, life degrades into something dead. Indeed, negativity is what keeps life alive. Pain is constitutive for experience. Life that consists wholly of positive emotions and the sensation of flow is not human at all. The human soul owes its defining tautness and depth precisely to negativity. We learn about life and ourselves by dealing with disappointments and hurts in our relationships. All wisdom and strength can only be gained by struggling against difficult situations and pain. Hahn, however, worries that the imperative of boundless optimization is destroying the human soul. Hahn is anxious to point out that the violence of the positivity is just as destructive as the violence of negativity. The neoliberal subject is running aground on the imperative of self-optimization, that is, on the compulsion always to achieve more and more. So, healing, it turns out, means killing. Chapter 7 is called Shock. In this chapter, Hahn turns to Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine. That's her book. This work has two main characters. The first is called Dr. Shock. This is the name given to Montreal psychiatrist Dr. Ewan Cameron, who believed that administering electric shock could destroy bad elements within the brain, erase them, and enable a new personality to be constructed starting from a clean state. By means of electroshock, Cameron plunged his patients into a state of chaos that was supposed to provide the basis for their rebirth as healthy model citizens. In other words, he understood the acts of destruction he performed as a kind of creation. The psyche was subjected to a violent debranding and rebranding. It was to be newly formatted and rewritten, as it were. Cameron set up a panopticon with isolation chambers, where he conducted human experiments of the utmost cruelty. The rooms were like torture chambers. First, over the course of a month, patients were administered powerful electroshocks. This served to expunge their memories. In the process, they were also given mind-altering drugs. Their hands and arms were struck in a cardboard tubes in order to keep them from touching their bodies, i.e., to prevent them from having any encounter with their own self-image. Moreover, Cameron deprived his patients of sensory impressions by inducing extended sleep by pharmaceutical means. They were brought out of this state only to eat and perform bodily functions. Such functions could last for up to 30 days. Such conditions could last up. Staff were instructed to prohibit patients from speaking. Cameron's hospital was a panopticon far crueler than Bentham's. The CIA funded Cameron's research, which took place at the height of the Cold War. A fervent anti-communist, Cameron thought his experiments were part of the battle. He likened his patients to communist prisoners of war undergoing interrogation. Indeed, his practice resembled interrogation techniques. They occurred in conjunction with brainwashing and ideological struggles of the Cold War. The Manichaean opposition between good and evil lay at their foundation. Evil would be wiped away, eradicated, and replaced by good. Likewise, the negativity of immunological defense against the other, or the enemy, defined Cameron's practices. As Dr. Schock, Cameron represents a phenomenon of immunological age. The immunological intervention of shock therapy takes aim at the other, the alien, the enemy. It is meant to disarm the adversary, so his soul may be inscribed with a different ideology, another narrative. Klein's other main character, the second Dr. Schock, is Milton Friedman, the theologian of the neoliberal market. Klein draws parallels between the two men. For Friedman, the state of shock that follows a catastrophe offers the opportunity, indeed, the ideal moment for society to be reshaped. Accordingly, the neoliberal regime should operate by means of shock, which wipes the psyche clean and empties it out. When it has been rendered defenseless, the mind readily accepts radical programming. When people are still paralyzed and traumatized by disaster, they can become the objects of neoliberal conditioning. Friedman's mission, like Cameron's, rested on the dream of reaching back to a state of natural health when all was in balance before human interferences created distorting patterns. Where Cameron dreamed of returning the human mind to the pristine state, Friedman dreamed of depatterning society, of returning them to a state of pure capitalism, cleansed of all interruption, government regulation, trade barriers, and entrenched interests. Like Cameron, Friedman also believed that when the economy is highly distorted, the only way to reach that prelapsarian state was to deliberately inflict painful shock. Only bitter medicine could clear those distortion and bad patterns out of the way. But Hahn argues that Klein's theory of shock blinds her to the actual working of neoliberal psychopolitics. Shock therapy is a genuinely disciplinary technique. In contrast, the neoliberal technology of power does not exercise disciplinary coercion. Electroshock's mode of operation differ fundamentally from that of neoliberal psychopolitics. Electroshock owes its efficiency to paralyzing and annihilating the content of the psyche. Its essential trait is negativity. In contrast, neoliberal psychopolitics is dominated by positivity. Instead of working with negative threats, it works with positive stimuli. Instead of administering bitter medicine, it enlists liking. It flatters the psyche instead of shaking it and paralyzing it with shock. Neoliberal psychopolitics seduces the soul. It preempts it in lieu of opposing it. Neoliberal psychopolitics is smart politics. It seeks to please and fulfill, not to repress. All right.
You're listening to KDVS Davis, 90.3 FM. The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Up next, The Smile Show, after these messages.
A few years ago, Steve Faircow's lungs were failing.
I don't think I had more than a couple weeks to live.
That's when Steve received a lung transplant made possible by an organ donor. Now Steve can do things he never imagined, like climbing 94 floors to the top of a skyscraper.
I never knew that breathing could feel this good. It's an incredible gift.
What could you make possible as an organ, eye, and tissue donor? Leave behind the gift of life. Go to organdonor.gov, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm throwing out these batteries.
You can't throw those batteries in the trash.
I didn't know that.
The state of California has imposed a landfill ban on all household batteries. As of February 2006, household batteries cannot be thrown away in the trash. The Yolo County Division of Integrated Waste Management collects household batteries and recycles them. For a list of places you can recycle batteries and what types are accepted, go to www.davisrecycling.org and click on batteries.
Common sense, baby. All it takes to keep your family healthy this flu season. The California Association for Nurse Practitioners says simple steps like frequently washing hands, getting plenty of rest, and reducing stress can help ward off the flu. Simple steps for a healthy America.
Well-being, empowerment. Welcome to this week's edition of The Smiles Show and Podcast Smiles. Join our host, Jimmy Smiles, as we connect virtually. And now, here's Jimmy.
And here I am, already back in the building for another edition of The Smile Show. I'm so glad to be with you on this first new edition of The Smile Show for the last month of the year 2024. I cannot believe that we are already into December and it's almost halfway over. How did that happen, right? In any case, I hope your December is going well so far, and I hope you are enjoying the changing of the seasons. We've had kind of interesting weather as of late. You know, we've had all that rain back in November, and then December has been relatively on the dry side so far, unusually mild and dry. So it's kind of feast or famine these days, it seems like, when it comes to our California weather scene. So we'll have to see how things continue to unfold in the winter months to come. In any case, welcome aboard to The Smile Show. This is a weekly public affairs program. And first of all, the standard disclaimer, the views and opinions you hear on The Smile Show are those of the authors I share and of myself, and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KDVS or the Regents of the University of California. But really, the show is not so much about opinion as it is about sharing resources, information, community events, things to help you decide what's best for you in your world. That's really what it's all about here each week on The Smile Show. It's not so much opinion. It's more about sharing multiple perspectives, and especially those perspectives that may not always get shared on all the commercial radio stations. And so KDVS is where you hear The Smile Show every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. So let's start with a big round of applause for the KDVS listeners and volunteers and students and everybody else who's involved in some way or somehow with KDVS. So that's where many people hear The Smile Show on 90.3 FM KDVS on Friday afternoons at 5.